Thank you.
Every once in a rare while, if we are lucky, we have the privilege of hearing a hero, a woman or man larger than life. Today is one of those rare moments, for we are privileged to hear from a giant, one who, with God's grace, has enabled all of us to stand taller in pride for the human race. In fighting against the evil of apartheid, Bishop Desmond Tutu is fighting for the essential unity and dignity of all persons. We pray that Bishop Tutu, like another great hero, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., will lead his country to peaceful change with our support and with the support of millions of others who care. We thank the Adelphi Foundation and our colleagues for bringing him here, and we welcome him now, Bishop Desmond Tutu.
My dear friends, my sisters and brothers, one of the great advantages of a black skin is that when you are blushing, nobody notices. I stand here on behalf of very, very many people back home who would want to have been here themselves to express on their own behalf their deep appreciation for your commitment to their struggle for justice, for peace, for reconciliation, for humanity. They would have liked to have been here to see you in your identification with them when you take over their struggle to say that it is your struggle. It isn't given to many of us to be able to say without being presumptuous that they know they are speaking for millions. Now, as you know, someone visited my country, and on his return to this country, pontificated about the fact that one of my attributes, which very few people mention when they introduce me, was that I was a phony. Now, I would like to say to him and to those who may support him that I know that this is one occasion when I speak without fear of contradiction. When I say I do speak on behalf of millions, when I say thank you to you. Thank you for your caring. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your commitment. I know, too, that I am using words that are hackneyed, that are shop-soiled, fly-blown, utterly inadequate as vehicles for conveying the deep emotions which I seek to represent to you today. But then this is not a peculiar phenomenon for today. Because each one of you knows that one characteristic of human language is how utterly inadequate it turns out to be in expressing the deep things that you and I often experience. How often and often human language is in arrears of the reality that it seeks to describe. And so often, perhaps ravished by the beauty of a Beethoven symphony, or the allurements of a wonderful sunset, you try to describe to another what has happened to you. And you know you end up somewhat lamely. Oh, it was very beautiful. And even if you were to use how many words, you know deep down in you that you have not succeeded in letting the other share the emotion that you have experienced. But I would want to ask you to exercise some imagination and perceive these words, thank you, as being shot through and through with emotion that is ultimately ineffable. How do you get to express, for instance, the feeling of a father sentenced to 12 years imprisonment for a political offense, who is able to appeal against his conviction and sentence, because the Southern Council of Churches, for which I have worked, is able to fund that appeal with assistance and support that has come from right around the world. Can you imagine how he must have felt when his appeal succeeded? And now he is free. He is not languishing in a maximum security prison. If he were to stand up in front of you and to say, thank you, would you be able to fathom the depth of his feeling? I ask you to try and feel in the words that I say, thank you. That father saying those words to you. Or can you imagine what his wife must feel like when she wants to say to you, thank you, that I am not a grass widow for 12 years. Or his children, thank you that we are not bereft of our daddy for 12 years. I could multiply examples of that kind, of what your support has meant, what your support means. Some institutions, like your own, have raised funds for various organizations back home that are striving against the evil, the iniquity of apartheid. And on behalf of all of those, I want to say thank you. And I would like to say so particularly to young people who have helped us recover a new faith in humanity. Something is happening on the campuses in America. Someone said some time ago that, oh well, most young people these days are concerned about how they are going to make out in the red race. There's very little of the idealism there was in the 1960s. And most students care only about what grades they will make. I can testify to the falsity of that statement. I came to this country in May of last year and visited a number of campuses. And you'd have thought that we were back in the 60s when they were reverberating the campuses with the cries of those who were saying, let our boys come home. With all the campaigning against Vietnam and all the dreams that people were dreaming about a great society where it would not be the color of a person's skin that would count by the content of their character. I came in May at a time when normally on campuses people are virtually obsessed with exams and grades and degrees. Now, I am not one to poo-poo degrees and grades. Those are important things. But it warmed the cockles of one's heart. I don't know what cockles are, but they certainly were warmed. When I would speak to audiences of 15,000 students sitting out in the blazing sun in California to demonstrate, to protest against the evil of apartheid. They were saying there are some things that are more important than degrees. They were saying in an extraordinary way when they needn't have, because you see, in the Vietnam situation, there was a fair degree of self-interest. They were talking about Americans, and they were also perhaps a little concerned that they might be drafted into the army. And so they were a little concerned that they might kick the bucket those many, many miles away from home. But on this occasion, young people were being concerned about something with which, in a sense, they needn't have been concerned. They were caring about the human family. And this idealism is one that has spilled over into things like Live Aid, We Are the World. Young people who often don't hit the headlines, who go away from their homes to serve in third world countries and give part of their lives. A wonderful testament to a belief in this deep reverence for human persons. Because you see, my friends, even when you do not articulate it in so many words, you are ultimately saying you accept one of the basic tenets of the Judeo-Christian faith. That a human person, whatever their condition or status in the world, is someone to be approached with a deep reverence, because this is someone created in the image of God. And there are some lovely stories at the beginning of the Bible. One of them describes how God creating the first person. Of course, you know this is poetry, really. Speaks of God creating us out of dust. And then, as something utterly precious and fragile, God breathes the breath of life to give life to this clod of earth. And forever, God holds us in the palms of his hands. In the words of the song, he has the whole world in his hands. He has you, he has me. And you, in your concern, may not always say it in this way, but you are saying that as you look on each one of God's children, you realize that this is someone who is indwelt by the Spirit of God. This is someone who is a tabernacle of the Holy Spirit of God. This is someone who is God's representative. This is someone who is God's viceroy. Someone of infinite worth. And this is why you execrate as much as you do this evil policy, this iniquitous policy, this totally immoral policy of apartheid, which seeks to find the worth of a person in a biological irrelevance, the color of one's skin. And you say, it can't be. It can't be that. What makes me valuable to God is something as ephemeral, as ununiversal, as this biological quality. And you agree that ultimately the blasphemy of apartheid is that it can turn God's children and make them doubt that they are God's children and have them treated as if they were less than what God intended them to be. Someone may have said to you, what you do here in America is of little consequence. It doesn't count. It doesn't make any difference, my dear friends. Don't ever be deluded into accepting such a blatant lie. What you do here, what you do, you and you and you, makes a difference. You know something? Often you and I are overwhelmed when we face problems. And apartheid is a major, a colossus. And often, we are made to shrug our shoulders and feel impotent and say, what can puny me do against this? Well, remember that the sea is made up of drops of water. Remember that it is individuals who make a difference. And this week, we are celebrating this profound truth in honoring a great, great son of the soil who made a difference. And you make a difference. You make a difference. You make a difference for the victims of apartheid when they hear that you have protested, you have demonstrated, you have said something against evil and injustice and oppression, then somehow their spirits are lifted. For they know then that, no, we have friends. No, the world cares. No, injustice does not have so many friends. And their morale is boosted. What you do and what you say make a difference. The perpetrators of apartheid quiver before you. Because they know that they are trying to live a lie. And what you do and what you say are part of the refutation of that lie. And their morale in each turn is subverted. Of course, you have heard too, my friends, how they say, you know how to eat an elephant. It's massive, isn't it? Well, they say you eat an elephant one piece at a time. And you have made a difference. In 1984, we came here in September. And if you had said to anyone that in 1985, the US Congress would be discussing what sanctions, not whether sanctions, but what sanctions to apply to South Africa, almost everybody would have said, it looks like you need to go and lie on somebody's couch and let them sit by you with a pad on their knee and tell them some of your dreams. Because almost everybody would have said, sorry, it looks like you do have a screw loose. But you and others across this land, by your demonstrations, by standing out in the rain and in the cold, in the sunshine and in the heat, you helped to do something which only human beings can do, which is to transform the moral climate in this land. And you got to helping to transform quite dramatically so that Congress people and senators got the message. The people of America were saying, enough is enough. We do not want to be aligned with a policy that rubs the dignity of God's children in the dust and tramples it underfoot. And you, with your people power, which we celebrate today, were able to force the hand of the president of this land, who had said he would never apply sanctions against South Africa, for him to have done precisely that. Yes, it may have been mild sanctions, but they were sanctions all the same. Because you were saying, you have made a choice. You have made a moral choice. You were saying America has made a choice. America, which has sadly had an extraordinary penchant for backing the wrong horse. Because when you look around the world, you see, in the Philippines, in South Korea, in Latin America, in far too many places on the globe, it seems America has been hoodwinked into accepting that you can be as blatant in your erosion of human rights as long as you declare that you are anti-communist. And so And so you find America has been backing some of the most repressive governments. And you are saying, we have made a choice. The struggle in South Africa is a moral struggle. You are saying we have decided. We want to be on the side of justice, not injustice. We have decided to be on the side of right, not on the side of wrong. We've decided to be on the side of humanity and not on the side of inhumanity. We have decided to be on the side of compassion and not on the side of naked, brutal power. We have decided to be on the side of sharing, of caring, not on the side of hoarding the goodies just for a few. We have decided that we can no longer be on the side of a government that can kill 4-year-olds who are playing in front of their home with rubber bullets. And at the inquest, the magistrate can say, no one is to blame for this death, when only the police and the security forces use rubber bullets. You say, we can no longer be on the side of a system that says to a man, when you get married, it is in order for you to be separated from your wife, that you leave your family and go into the white man's town as a migrant worker. You marry in order to lead an unnatural life in a single-sex hostel. You marry so that you are separated from your children for 11 months of the year. Say, no, we have decided we can't be on the side of such a system. We have decided we can no longer be on the side of a system that destroys stable communities because they are black communities. Since the authorities say where those people live is now to be handed over to whites, and stable communities are destroyed, and people are uprooted, and people are dumped as if they were rubbish, dumped as if they were things, in poverty-stricken Bantustan homelands. You say, no, we can no longer be part of something that supports something so iniquitous, which destroys black family life, not accidentally, but deliberately, as part of government policy. 3.5 million people have been so uprooted and so dumped. Say, we have decided we can no longer be part of something that supports a system which places children in areas where there is little food, so that black children starve. Not because there is no food, for South Africa is a land which normally is a net exporter of food. They starve because of deliberate government policy. We have a land which has pioneered heart transplants, some of the most intricate medical technology. And yet we've not yet worked out how we can provide people with a clean supply of water. We can still have in South Africa outbreaks of cholera in a land that has pioneered heart transplants. We can no longer support a system that says we are going to give discriminatory inferior education to God's children and stunt their emotional and intellectual growth deliberately. We want to be part of the system, the movement, spearheaded by children who have said, you know something? We have been created in the image of God. We have been created for freedom. And we will be free. Even if it means that we will take up stones against guns, police dogs, police bullets, tear gas, detention without trial, solitary confinement, we will strive. We will strive until victory is won. And you and I and all of us are part of that great movement, God's own movement, the freedom movement. The movement for humanity. This movement that says, hey, South Africa will be free for all of its people, black and white. You say we're part of that movement. And you know, our people have said we execrate racism with every fiber of our being. And that sounds almost like a slogan. And then they prove it. A few weeks ago, a white woman died. And because people recognized her as a stalwart in the fight for justice and for peace and for reconciliation, at her funeral, 20,000 people turned out to pay a remarkable tribute to Molly Blackburn, white. And over 90% of those who came to that funeral were black persons. People who you would have thought by this time would say, to hell with all white people. They say, uh-uh. We don't hate white people. We hate apartheid. We hate injustice. We hate oppression. And we are for goodness, for justice, for peace. And they say, yes, we too have been to the mountaintop. And we too have seen the promised land. And we too want to stride together, black and white, into this tremendous future whose vistas open up before all of us, black and white. Say, we are going to be human together, black and white. We're going to stride into this great future, this new South Africa, this non-racial South Africa where people will count not because of the color of their skins, but where people count because they have been made in the image of God. We will stride out together into this new South Africa, a democratic South Africa. We will stride out together and walk tall, black and white together, knowing that we can be human only together in fellowship as children of one family, of one father, members of the same family, the human family, God's family, black and white together. And you And all of your people in this land are part of that great, great movement. Freedom is coming. Freedom for all of us. For as long as one is unfree, all are unfree. Freedom for all of us, black and white together, is a coming. And if God before us, the God of the Exodus, the great liberator God who strides ahead of his people, leading them from bondage into freedom, if this God be for us, who can be against us?